Welcome back to The Savvy Psychologist. I'm Dr. Ellen Hendrickson, and every week I'll help you meet life's challenges with evidence-based research, a sympathetic ear, and zero judgment. All crying is not created equal. There are times when it's appropriate, your best friend's wedding, after a heart-shattering breakup, or the first time you hold your grandchild. But there are also times and places our culture has decided it's inappropriate to cry, like at work or school. But many of us struggle with seemingly random crying, including listener Jessica, who wrote in and asked how to avoid bursting into tears, whether in the conference room at work or attempting to get past page 2 of The Giving Tree with her kids. Now, originally, I had intended this week's episode to cover only how to hold back tears. But in diving into the research, I found that many of the truisms about crying are wrong, or at least partially wrong. Therefore, this week, we'll cover two big myths of crying and round it out with how to access the shutoff valve for your own waterworks. Okay, first, so why do we cry? Well, interestingly, humans are really bad at pinpointing why we cry. When asked, most of us report that we cry when we're physically hurt, or someone we care about gets married, dumps us, or dies. Now, those all make sense, but it turns out those are the prototypical reasons to cry, not the actual reasons we often cry. When researchers ask about the most recent time we cried, we tell a very different story. And it turns out we cry from really mundane reasons. We have a small personal failing, a minor conflict, or we're on the receiving end of criticism. In short, we do cry over life's milestones, but mostly we cry over everyday interactions. Okay, next, let's look at the idea that crying makes you feel better. Again, this is an area where popular perception isn't the whole story. Now, most psychologically minded people, mental health professionals included, are guilty of encouraging crying. Let it out, we say. It's cathartic. We even warn that bad stuff might happen to your health if you bottle up your feelings. But is that true? Not so fast. Turns out, we only feel better after a good cry 50% of the time. What's happening the other half of the time? Well, anyone who's ever been depressed can tell you crying doesn't make you feel better in the midst of a depression. Neither, it turns out, does crying over an event that we perceive as uncontrollable. Likewise, if people react to your crying with disapproval, you definitely won't feel better. And crying often gets a bad rap, especially for men. Anthropologists would say that inopportune crying breaks what's called, quote, display rules. And for Western culture, crying in public or at work registers for men as weak and for women as hysterical, emotional, or at worst, manipulative. Now, all those are sexist, to be sure, but still, no one wants to cry in front of the boss. So, how to play within the display rules of crying? Well, there's no foolproof way, but the best of the science offers three things to try. Tip number one is act more powerful. Okay, so let's revisit those mundane reasons we cry. Most quote-unquote irrational crying is actually triggered by feelings of powerlessness or helplessness. And this is why a minor brush-off, getting stood up, a confrontation at work, or not being taken seriously at the conference table can lead to unexpected tears. It seems random, but when we look deeper, it makes sense. It also makes sense according to evolution. Tears do two things. One, they signal that we need support from others. And second, they diffuse aggressive situations. A study in the uber-prestigious journal Science found that women's tears contain an odorless chemical that reduces testosterone levels in men. Now, at the time that study was published, the popular press spun it into crying turns men off, but in evolutionary terms, it's super practical, signaling to potential partners that what she needs when she's upset is some support rather than a roll in the hay. Evolution aside, the way to hold back tears when you're undercut or disregarded is to act more powerful in the moment. Try this. If you feel tears coming on, channel your inner boss. Be assertive. Take up space. Stand up straight. Put your hands on your hips. Act like you own the place. Politely, of course. If you're a customer or a patient, remember the outlet in question works for you. All in all, remember you're not helpless. You have rights, dignity, and a voice. Okay, you say acting and feeling more powerful is great for when I feel invalidated or disrespected, but what about getting through the Fault in Our Stars on an airplane or even the Star Spangled Banner in the local stadium? How to hold back tears when we feel empathy, compassion, or are simply deeply moved? Well, first, cut yourself some slack and reframe your self-judgment. Think of yourself as someone who feels deeply, who sucks the marrow out of life. Thoreau would be proud. But if you're welling up at a commercial not involving injured puppies in a Sarah McLachlan song, compassionate crying can feel awkward, especially if you're in public. So try this. Tip number two, arrange your face. Participants in a research study at Columbia University were told they were taking part in a brainwave monitoring study. Monitoring electrodes were placed on their face, and they were instructed to keep as still as possible because movement would compromise the data. Then they watched a series of both neutral and emotional videos. What happened? Well, the study, which wasn't about brainwaves at all, instead found that inhibiting facial expression decreases the strength of emotional experience. Emotion determines your expression, to be sure, but it turns out your expression also determines emotion. So the next time Adele's Hello comes on in a crowded elevator, or the TV over the bar shows a toddler being reunited with a parent in army fatigues returning from their tour of duty, keep a poker face, and you might not have to fake having something in your eye. And tip number three is breathe slowly. No matter the trigger, if you do find yourself crying, you can rein it in faster by breathing slowly. Since crying is a form of stress relief, substitute another form of stress relief, slow breathing, to lower the pressure. Notice I say breathe slowly rather than breathe deeply. Deep breathing, especially if done at a rapid pace, can upset the balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide in your bloodstream and make you feel anxious or lightheaded, which is the last thing you need when you're trying to keep it together. Okay, finally, what about welling up in tears of joy, gratitude, or the awe of standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon? Psychologist Ad Vingerhoots of Tilburg University in the Netherlands, arguably the world expert on crying, calls tears from positive emotions exclamation marks. They express feelings that cannot be expressed any other way. So, when you well up with positive emotions, just let the tears flow. And also during Steel Magnolias. Nothing but a box of tissues can save us there. Thank you so much for making The Savvy Psychologist a part of your life. To round out the show, here is a quick and dirty tip from my new book, How to Be Yourself, Quiet Your Inner Critic, and Rise Above Social Anxiety. Now, most of us know how social anxiety feels. It feels like the urge to hide, to conceal. It's how you feel when you realize you have spinach in your teeth or your skirt is tucked into your pantyhose, except instead of for the outer you, it's for the inner you. It's the urge to hide some perceived deficiency in your personality, your social skills, or even your own anxiety. We're convinced it will become obvious to everyone that we're awkward, annoying, stupid, have nothing to offer, or that we're blushing or sweating through our shirt. But that's precisely what makes social anxiety a problem. The fatal flaw we so fear isn't even true, or is only true to the degree that no one really notices or cares. And sometimes this knowledge alone, that social anxiety is based on an illusion, is comforting. How you feel isn't how others see you. And imagine how much better you'd feel if you saw yourself as they did. Pick up How to Be Yourself wherever you like to get your books, and no matter where you buy it, please leave an honest review on Amazon. Reviews make a big difference and help new readers find the book. It's already in its second printing, and I've been overwhelmed by heartfelt messages from readers and listeners all around the world. So thanks from the bottom of my heart for all your support. As always, the Savvy Psychologist is strictly for informational purposes and doesn't substitute for mental health care from a licensed professional. As always, have a wonderful week, and I'll see you here next Friday for a happier, healthier mind.